Counter Contemporary Art is pleased to welcome you to Discuss 6. Talking with us today, we have photographer and video artist Maria Freeberg, whose show is currently on view at the gallery. We also have with us photographer Julie Holcomb. Maria and Julie will be discussing women in contemporary photography.
Maria has been with us 6 years now. This is your third solo exhibition with us, called Embedded. Julie's been with the gallery, 2 years now? And we expect your second solo with us in 2008. So, Maria, would you tell us a little bit about Embedded and what's going on with your work?
Mm-hmm. This is a new project. It's both this video triptych here that we see on these flat screens, and it's also a series of photographs. We see one here, and there's three more. And the title is Embedded, and that is about being embedded in yourself, being protected in a nice way, like these guys here. They are in this wonderful beauty and silk sheets, and it's a nice way of being. But that also emphasizes that you are isolated at the same time. These individuals are on their own way somewhere. These three or four men are falling and floating out of the bed slowly, and they are doing it in their own world. They have no real contact with others, though they are a group. But that's okay. I mean, it's we are alone in the world, even though we have close friends, and it's
mm-hmm. Does it also talk a little bit about man versus nature, or a little bit, Marie, we're talking about icebergs and the slow movement of the men through nature?
Yeah, that these works are a bit abstract in their visual look as well, and so I was thinking when we were talking yesterday about this, like the icebergs in Greenland that are melting and everything is floating and what is happening. I mean, of course, we hadn't control of nature before either, but we were not worried about it. But now it's a big problem and something is happening. And so that's like the global thing. This could be like it's just floating away and we don't know where it's going. But also in your individual life, it's hard to have a bigger picture of what you're doing, actually. You better go with the flow than just try to stop it and to be brave and get out there.
Great. Julie, could you tell us a little bit about your work before we start listening to what you have to say with each other?
The last few years I've been replicating classical paintings, sort of choosing, appropriating really iconic imagery from the archives of our past, somewhat as a metaphor for history repeating itself, in sort of in a nutshell. And this is a series of portraiture. I also do landscape that also is referencing how the landscape in our current times is completely evolving and changing. And
so that's one beginning point for you, is the idea of environmentalism and man and nature in both mm-hmm. of your works.
Mm-hmm.
Want to talk a little bit about that, Julie, with your work, continue on with that?
Correct. I think with the portraiture, they start out as they become personal because I'm photographing people that I'm close to and that I know, but I hope that the viewer can also relate to the figures, and also, like, I'm using the symbolic imagery as metaphors. And with Homo Bula, the two young boys in this photograph, I wanted to choose two young children who I thought resembled, sort of were androgynous. And many people refer to them as two females, and they're actually two males, two young boys. And these are children who I often have sat for, and will go to the grocery store, and they'll go to the bathroom, and women are screaming at me that these two young girls are going into the men's bathroom. So thinking about what happens to that child, living in this period, but also the time that I was doing this portrait, the tsunami hit, so I was relating to the current times by opening the page up to where the tsunami hit, and the young boys are obviously oblivious because they're in their own world, and the bubbles represent sort of man's mortality. And speaking of, to talk about like a happy accident, the hourglass I had ordered online, and when it arrived, it was broken. So I thought, I was upset, but I thought, hey, I'll just go with it. So, and then with the portrait of the three young women, which is called The Banker's Daughters, again, it's another personal portrait of my friend's three young children, and she was had breast cancer, and she passed away this past summer. So the storm that's outside the window was sort of to talk about herself as a metaphor of sort of the tragedy that was about to happen to these beautiful young family, and that you can live a very rich life, but it's not going to prepare you for tragedies in our life. I don't know if that answered your question, but
gives us an overview a little bit. So you've been down at Starbucks for 2 hours talking about your work. What did you guys say?
We talked a lot about our process, like how you get the idea, which is always like a little secret otherwise. How do you get the idea? Everyone
wonders. Well, tell us all. How do you get the idea, Marie? How do you start?
I get the full image in my head directly. So it's just like bang, and it's there. It's like, if I talk about that picture.
Still Lives, five.
Still Lives, five, with them. With this, the idea was a stack of cars and a man on top, like the princess on the pea. I was very much thinking about fairy tales during that time. So that was like, I wanted to do a male version of that story.
So the idea of cars and...
Yeah, like mattresses and like just...
The male versus the female also.
Yeah, and also like... I mean, like the modern life that is crashing. I look at cars as something that is almost already history. Because it's... I mean, soon it has to go away with this old type of cars. So it's like... layers of like archaeological layers or time, and it's something romantic about it. It's something like as you use these historical references with them, like refers to old paintings, like with the glass and things like that.
Yeah.
I already think that these cars is like old references.
But this sort of, this was already in your head. You woke up one morning and that was it.
Yeah, it's
and
just...
And then you went out and found it.
No, then I think about the idea for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, we were standing in front of this piece for a few minutes talking about it. And, I mean, my view, like, I like to think about metaphors. And for me, like, the cars are metaphors for, you know, damaged goods. And I think about the human being as, you know, we're all damaged goods, even, you know, at 1 year old, but... But when I first look at this photograph, I feel like, okay, you found this location, you said, okay, you have your figure, okay, climb up on top and I'll take the photograph. But elaborate on sort of really how constructed and contrived this photograph really is.
Yeah, it maybe looks like I just found something and just did it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But I really color arranged it and rearranged it, and these people at this car dump helped me to... Because I was like having a red car in the middle, and I was like, oh my god, I'm sorry, I just have to take that away. And so I'm really paint with my photographs. I started off as a painter, so this is really like, I'm using the contrast, black and white a lot, as you see, and also like how the, it should be like a painterly color shifts from this blue to white, and that's very important to me.
But
so the ideas comes really like straightforward, but then I of course get something
for free when you're out there, when you take your idea out to the reality,
mm-hmm.
it clash with it, and you have to know what you should use different materials. And I wanted the sky white, how should I do it? I have to just wait for the right day and the right moment. I mean, I work like that. I mean, you work more like than you would Photoshop maybe in the sky, or you know, it's.
But your ideas come sort
like
of
yeah, when
in
we were
bits,
discussing
yeah.
sort of contriving a photograph. For me, I would do it in Photoshop because I financially I would think it's easier. But she was saying no, actually everyone's very helpful and was
yeah.
doing it for free.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it seems like it would be a harder thing to do to actually manipulate these huge objects to make the photograph. It's more impressive to me to actually construct this in the real environment than in the artificial environment of the computer.
I think the opposite. It would be harder for me to do this in Photoshop, just to, because you get so much in from the back from the reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because I couldn't possibly figure it out that I could see through these here, and I see the pine trees gapping.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I get extra, I think, like some details I could never. I mean, I think my idea was good, but then you get, you know,
chance.
You get something more.
A little bit of chance
yeah,
is involved
bit of chance.
In doing that.
Yeah.
But for you, as you construct a photograph, is there an element of chance in there at all?
Yes.
And how does that work for you?
Sometimes when I'm juxtaposing different images together as
mm-hmm.
I'm rearranging,
mm-hmm.
and I'll see two photographs together and think, oh, that I think that works.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually I go with a preconceived notion of what the image is going to look like, but I allow it to sort of change and evolve as I'm working through the process.
Mm-hmm. But I also know that you go out to find specific images, like this bottle of water or this pen or this building at a certain time of day.
Right. For example, I've been obsessed with this old Pizza Hut I've been driving by. They've removed all the sign, Pizza Hut, everything, but it's still the architectural structure. You know
mm-hmm.
it's a Pizza Hut because of the roof and the windows. And I thought, oh, I better go photograph this because, you know, who knows, it may not be there tomorrow. So that night I go out, I photograph it because, you know, I'm studying light pollution. And sure enough, the following day I drive by and the building's completely gone. And so then that night, I photographed the same spot. So, you know, I don't know, I don't have a pre-visualization what that's going to be, but I like that idea of sort of the before and after. So,
mm-hmm.
if that answers somewhat
your
question.
No, but we were talking about that we both worked quite slowly in the process.
Mm-hmm.
I have the idea in my head for maybe a year before I do it.
Mm-hmm.
So just to keeping like resting it for a while, and then it faces the reality, and I do it quite quickly when I do the shoot.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one day shot,
mm-hmm.
and if it's a disaster, of course I redo it. But it's like that almost never happens because I try to just think about it as one time, and then that works best.
Mm-hmm. Do you consider this a painting?
Yeah, I do actually.
Mm-hmm. In what regard? I know you came from the painting background. This is a sculpture, actually.
Yeah,
it's happening. You know?
Yeah, it's a performance, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's it comes from the performance. When I was painting, I was always painting after models. I like that
mm-hmm.
relationship to a person like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I continued that, I guess.
And you also, do you consider what you're doing here painting as well? Is that?
I've learned a lot about painting.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't
considered Photoshop painting, and I'm very
I do mm-hmm. in some sort of sense. I think the way I relate to painters is the way they distort perspective
mm-hmm.
and change reality.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I have that same parallel going on.
Mm-hmm. And you've both mentioned performance to me as part of like things that. really inform what you're doing. I mean, you used to actually do performance, did you not?
I did for a little bit.
Yeah. And we thought about going back to that, or how does that...
I haven't really thought about it in a while.
Okay.
It was sick. For today, we were talking about it this morning, that, you know, speaking with Maria, like, it was really inspiring hearing about, you know, the work process and the collaboration you did with one of your close friends, that relationship and, you know, that important thing, like, you were using the word trust, like, to do performance, but, yeah, talking about, like, thinking about in this triptych of trying to get, you know, 4 or 5 performers to do exactly what you want them to do, is one reason, like, why I like to utilize Photoshop, is, you know, trying to get 3 young women to do exactly what you want for that decisive moment, I think is really challenging. So to see Maria be able to, you know, get 5 performers to, you know, look like they're oozing out of, you know, this minimalist painting, if you will, I think is astounding. And plus, I think, for, you know, too, about, you know, being able to direct and work, you know, and collaborate with these other people.
Mm-hmm. So do both of you feel like maybe being women in contemporary photography, that you must bring in other disciplines or types of experience with that? Talk a little bit about that and being female and being a photographer or identifying as a photographer.
To be, you mean to be behind the camera and in charge of the situation?
Mm-hmm.
And people often ask me if I think it's really, if it's fun to direct all these men, and of course it is. And it's nice to be in power position, of course. And but it's like, I do tell them what to do with a lot of respect and love, and I also feel myself in their situation a lot. So it's not like they are men and I'm over here, I'm safe, but it's like I'm very much them, so I'm that involved. And I mean, I think it's easy for me to ask people in the street, since I'm a woman. If I were a man and asked, can you do this for me? Come home to my whatever studio. It maybe sound more scary. People don't find me scary looking, and they're like, I smile a lot, and it's like, okay, just come here.
You don't use candy, do you?
No. Sometimes I use my husband, because he's very, like, he's very, like, handsome and very low-key and very nice, good vibes. Because if it's like me and 5 guys that I don't know, and I bring them somewhere we're going to shoot, it can be a lot of tension. They don't know what's happening, and you know how it's. And then if he's along, it kind of ease out the atmosphere, actually.
Okay. For you?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. It's a hard one, I think, to answer. But I think a lot. Let me try to articulate this. I myself feel that women are the stronger of the sexes, but we sort of know our place and try to hide the fact that I think we're more powerful. So we choose it when we need to. An example like Feast of the Newlyweds, looking at old traditional portraits of newlyweds in classical painting, usually the woman was always gazing at the male, and the male was looking at the viewer, and he was the stronger, more stoic figure. And so I wanted to revert those roles just in my own personal experience of watching male-female relationships in heterosexual relationships. I've always seen women sort of be the leader. So I find myself like wanting to portray that in images, showing women as stronger without, you know, objectifying them, and I think over sexualizing the female figure in my photographs.
Okay. And so how does that work into sort of contemporary photography as a whole? There's so much out there now. I mean, this is a big subject to sort of grasp onto, but thinking about both of your works, being female, seeing Gursky photographs go for millions at auction, that sort of thing. Women sort of, I mean, this is a big subject, but talk a little bit about that. And you as a little bit more established artist and you as more of an up-and-coming artist, both being women in this field.
I think this field is freer. That's maybe why women choose it. And it's newer. It's not loaded as paintings are. It has this more male tradition. So that's why we work with video and photographs. So, I mean, I live in Stockholm, and most of my colleagues there, the most famous one are women, and they work with photos and videos, and they also have international careers. So that seems in Sweden that is what is strongest.
Is it easier to put forth your experience that way, do you think?
What do you mean?
Is it easier for you to show what your experiences in life and otherwise and your ideas that sort of pop into you that way by photographing them versus moving away from sculpture or painting?
No, I don't think so. I could have painted these ideas.
Yes.
But I don't want to live my life so isolated. So that's like,
okay.
It's more like I want to reach out and take my ideas to crash with the reality more and bring in people. So I'm confronted with something more.
Mm-hmm.
Not just in my head all the time and live my life like that. I think it's too much. Mm-hmm. And also, yeah, take part in life more, actually.
Not too solitary a pursuit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to be in the Global Feminism Show at the Brooklyn Museum that opens this year. Do you consider yourself a feminist?
Yes, I do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What about you? Do you think that you're a feminist and that sort of informs what you're doing?
I do consider myself a feminist. Studied lots of feminist theory in graduate school and undergrad. And that was an eye-opening experience. I think in relationship to other photographers in the field or male photographers in the field, the ones, and I'm not even sure if that's something to aspire to, but they seem to have, like Gregory Crudson, seem to have a lot of funding and can have a huge team to be able to have people make the work for them. And I myself want to have more of a personal role and position, more connected to the process.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if you want to call that not selling out.
Okay. Take note, Mr. Crudson. Okay, is there anything else you guys would like? What else did you talk about? We're sort of like going all over the place a little bit.
Talked about the landscape, and that's what I'm curious too, with some of your sort of landscape photographs, which there's never per se a horizon line, which I think makes for very sexy, minimalist, and monochromatic photographs.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also wondering, like the ones like with the soccer players on the field and hovering over the bed, and the photograph of the gentleman in the swimming pool wearing the suit. Like, how do you approach photographing that without having a horizon line?
Practically I've taken a lot of photographs from above, like the man in the swimming pool.
So you rent a crane?
No, I was one up on the trampoline, like, on the...
Did you jump?
No, it was like, it was not one of those, it was a concrete one, like,
okay.
I don't know the name of that.
It's a platform.
They stick it out. But it was really damp in there, so they, we have to change camera because of the camera just collapsed. Because it was so much water in
humidity,
the air.
Humidity. Yeah.
So I like to change the perspective like that, so it really is very physical. That's why I'm doing this scale, often like large scale format, because I think my photos has a certain distance in them, and they are a bit isolated, the people. So I try to make them large scale so they come physically into the space and to the viewer, so that contradicts and helps the you to connect to the work.
Because I think for me what happens with not having that horizon line is that space becomes unidentifiable and you can't relate to, like, where, you know, where is that location? And the same with, like, the figures that you use too, like, they're just sort of nondescript. It could be anybody, it could be me or you. So yeah, that's what happens, you know, like when you mentioned that one photograph of the three men at White Sands. Like, I've been there so many times, and the fact that I had no clue where that was. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
But no, but it's good that you're a little lost, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, so real, and anyway, you're kind of lost.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah, me too.
Well, great. Let's, I guess, open up the floor for questions. Does anybody have a question for either Maria or Julie?
Do both of you use models or people that you just happen to know or people that you just meet on the street that you find interesting? I don't work with friends or people I know, but I want to have new relationships, like new contacts. So I just walk in the streets and stay in a place, maybe at the train station or something, where I just come people floating out, and I have an idea about what I'm looking for. That's also very, like, formally, maybe I want five guys with dark hair just to match the suit in a formal way. You know, that, so it's, and then I have a certain type maybe in mind. Or, so then I just look there and ask and approach them.
But you were also talking about sort of the changing roles of, like, the face of Sweden, where you're looking for most people, is that now that you have more people immigrating into what is a very tall, blonde society, you have different types of people. So for Embedded, you were looking for different types of people who live in your society.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like a new generation. These guys here, they're maybe 20, 25, and they all have maybe the second generation immigrants or adopted, or, you know, they are from Colombia, Korea, Thailand, and so it's like this coming, finally coming up more mix in Sweden as well, which is nice. But it's, anyway, they, I mean, they're very precise, but anyway, you feel like they are replaceable, as you say, that it's just a flow of people passing by in your life.
Any other questions?
How long do they practice? Do they really look like expert performers?
I ask a lot of more guys than there are in the video. So I have to try. I just had one day because I was renting a really expensive camera. And so I picked 15 guys, and they all, some were dancers, but they were not the best ones. So they had to, they could, everyone tried first, and then I just had to say, you have to go, sorry. It's kind of mean, but, you know, it's, this is my work, so that's fine. And then the ones that were best are the ones that were doing meditation, actually, because they were so relaxed, and they have an easy time to just be in their mind and move that slowly. So this is real time. It's not speeded down or anything.
And you got them to shave their heads, all of them?
No, that's the thing. I don't ask someone to change. I pick the look and everything. If I'm looking for five men in suits, I pick them already in suits. So I won't take the suits on to anyone. That's a huge thing. So they were already, that's the way they looked like.
So you're not asking someone to take on a different persona than they already have?
No, I'm trying to find the person. Yeah. I mean, at least what, I don't know them so much. I just, how I, yeah, see them or feel their, how they are.
I think with this photograph, it's so interesting that this is very hard metal. You know, it's very harsh, and it's, you know, you can hurt yourself doing it, but yet he lies on top of it as though it were, you know, made of silk or other material. It's such a marvelous contrast.
Yeah. I mean, it's so real, but also like surrealistic in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I like that tiny twist of reality like that.
I always like to ask the pragmatic question for artists who are starting out, to ask the question from artists who are getting established and those who are established, what are your top five recommendations to just keep at it? The beginning's really rough.
Never take that extra job. Just keep doing your own work. That's always my first advice for other artists, actually. What is your one?
I think a good third of the process is networking and joining a residency program. Because the people that you meet at a residency program are people that are from, you know, across the globe, so that you have connections in, you know, different cities in the United States or in Sweden or Europe. So, and I also, yeah, recommend going to as many openings as possible to meet people.
How do you feel about looking at other people's work?
I love it. I can't get enough, but I'm quick at, you know.
You're fast.
Yeah, there you go. Zip in, zip out.
Well, to that end, who are your mentors and who are your muses?
I like muses, probably my students. I also, my mentors... You mean directly people I studied under?
You can answer that any way you wish.
I would say artists that I think I respect who've sort of been steady and true to their own vision from the beginning of their career to the, you know, their end of their career, which I don't think there ever is. Hopefully there's never an end of the career. It hopefully, I guess, gets better after you die anyhow, but...
The dark side comes out.
You want to answer that?
My mentors. I think that's the, I don't know, it's the support from my artist friends. I mean, how it's very close. How I mean, of course, one of my professors who were really important in school. She's a painter. She was really tough and hard on me, and I really like that. And gives a lot of respect and seriousness to it. That is a serious job you have. And the other one was this?
Well, muses would be muses. People that have influenced you, that you possibly that you've never met, or you saw their work in a museum.
I really love like old master paintings. That's like a big kick. That's
Was there a particular old master painting that you saw at one point and you had this sort of aha moment? That's what I want to do.
I love Delacroix a lot. Mm-hmm. Like really dramatic and a lot of fabric, a lot of women, a lot of everything. They're also very sexy and I really like those paintings.
I'd like to add one other person to that, which... in graduate school, instead of having an artist in residence, we had a critic in residence, and that was the most overwhelming but most challenging, I think, time as an artist, which was actually being able to sit and talk about your work, which I think is probably just as important.
Any other questions? Well, great. Thank you for coming this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Discuss 6. Maria Freeburg's show is on view until February 24th, 2007. More information on Maria Freeburg and Julie Holcomb is available on our website at www.connorcontemporary.com.